Good evening. This is Bill Blatchford. Welcome to our Playing Your A-Game call. We had a lot of people sign up for this call. I think Michael Elliott from Rocket Dog Dental arranged 50 lines, and I think that's how many people signed up. However, we have a little competition tonight. We have the Ohio State-Florida basketball game, and so we will see. But I've been informed to tell all of you the basketball game has been postponed until 7:30, so we can focus on the call. Tonight, what we're going to do is we're going to interview Dr. Chris Kleber. This call tonight is sponsored by Rocket Dog Dental. Michael Elliott is probably on the call. Michael does a wonderful job of branding dental offices, does a lot of work with the Internet, getting a presence on the Internet, and developing websites and all-around marketing. It's also sponsored by Care Credit. They're one of my permanent sponsors. And Care Credit, as you know, is one of the best ways for patients to finance their dental work. And if any of you have any questions about that later, you can certainly email me or call me, and I can show you why it works so well to use outside funding. Not the topic of tonight's call. It's also sponsored by Blatchford Solutions, and we have our coaching program, which we'll be talking about. What I want to do tonight is talk with Dr. Chris Kleber. Chris came to me about 15 years ago, worked with me about 15 years ago, when I was doing groups around the country. At that time, Chris had a practice in El Cajon, which is about an hour east of his home on Coronado Island. During that period of time, he also opened purchased a small practice on Coronado Island. At that time, his dream was to practice in Coronado Island, and for various reasons, he decided not to do it. Now, part of my coaching at that time, I believe, was to go ahead and make the break. But anyway, about a year ago, year and a half ago, Chris's wife, Joy, called me. Now, Joy is an accountant, and Joy is not involved in the practice other than the fact that she keeps the books, and so we know the numbers are extremely accurate. She called me, and Chris was pretty much on burnout. Is that fair enough to say, Chris?
Yes, it is.
He had kind of lost interest in dentistry. Chris has done real well with financially. He's worked with several good financial planners, but more importantly, Chris has followed the plan, and that's one thing I will point out about financial planning, and the best planning in the world doesn't make any difference unless you follow the plan. But Chris was tired of dentistry, and Joy's biggest concern was that Chris would not stay in the game to complete the plan, because the plan is not over yet. Chris has every intention of practicing for several more years, and they have two children in college, or one in college and one getting ready to go to college, so they still have some expenses coming up. And his dream always has been to practice on Coronado Island where he lives. As a matter of fact, his office is about a five-minute walk from his home, and for those of you who have been to Coronado Island or in San Diego, you know this is a beautiful place to practice. Chris's father was in the Navy. Chris was in the Navy, and so Coronado Island's a perfect place for an ex-Navy dentist to be practicing. But this was the dream. But what happened over the last 15 years, we had no contact, and I would say that he lost sight of that dream and was pretty much trapped driving an hour each way out to work in El Cajon, because that was always considered his bread and butter practice. And he didn't have a team. He had a staff of people. And as you've probably heard me, if you've been on any calls with me, we consider a staff an infection, and a team is a small group of people going the same direction at the same time with the same intensity as the leader. But the leader had lost focus, the team had lost focus. Chris, why don't you give us your version of what took place in the last year and information that would help these doctors that are on the call in their own practice, things that they can apply, and I'm going to ask some questions as we go along. And I would also invite any of our listeners to ask questions of Chris as we go along. I can give you a rundown on what Blatchford Solutions does and what coaching is all about, but I think it's more valuable coming from a participant, one of our clients, than it is from me. And I think also it's a great opportunity for some of you to perhaps ask some direct questions to Chris, because not only did he raise his net over $100,000 this year, he also decreased the amount of days he was working, because he only works in Coronado, having simply closed the El Cajon practice. Chris, why don't you take it from there?
Okay. It was in 1994 that we first met, and I drove up to Orange County to meet you because you really weren't coming down to San Diego, and we met in a hotel lobby, and I looked you square in the eye. I said, what can you do for me? And you said, I can make a $100,000 difference in your net. And I, you know, the look you had, I knew you believed it. So with the program the first time around, we had some very good results, increased the net, went to the four-day work week and never taken every seventh week off, and I tell you
that. And you were working more than that at the time.
Yes, I was. And I've done that the 7 weeks off ever since then. And
that's the part of the program that stuck.
Yeah.
Was the 7 weeks off and the four-day work week.
Right. And we enjoyed a lot of good success. And as the alcohol practice grew, I got to the point where, you know, I couldn't handle it all, so I had an associate. I had two hygienists running me ragged there for a while. And if you haven't experienced burnout, it's when today looks like tomorrow and tomorrow looks like yesterday. Or I also describe it as the horse is riding you, you're not riding the horse. So it wasn't much fun. And talking with my wife about options, and, you know, I knew I was getting near a breaking point, even though you delude yourself until you really step back and take a good hard look. And that's when we called Bill. And
actually, it was your wife who called me.
Yeah, she called you.
You weren't quite ready yet.
And I wasn't quite ready, and she said, and we talked about it and said, okay, let's get this done. And it was November of 2005. We flew up to Portland and spent a day with you kind of mapping out the strategy. I'd had some very long-term team members, 17 years and 12 years, and you were saying, you know, they're just not on the bus. They're on their own agenda, and they're kind of riding you. So I made the decision to really step up and say, you know, this is my practice. This is my life. I'm going to make it the way I want. And that entailed coming back on January 1st, 2006, and letting four people go on January 2nd, telling everybody that in 8 months I'm going to be closing that practice and I'm going to be practicing only in Coronado. And it was a little scary, but, you know, when you strap on your samurai suit and...
Well, that's what had happened. Chris and his wife actually came to our home here in Sun River, and the night before, my wife and I had put on a Japanese dinner for our daughters and their husbands. It's kind of a tradition in our house. Each couple puts on one of the meals, and we had been in Tokyo and picked up a lot of props for this dinner at the Japanese fish market there. And Chris went over and put one of these bandanas on his head with the rising sun on the front, grabbed two butcher knives out of our knife block on the kitchen counter, and we had
Check
this banner hanging over the kitchen that you walk into a sushi restaurant, and he stood there and crossed his arms and said, I can do this. Now, here's what we suggested. This was not what they came for, but I listened to what Chris wanted, and I looked at the numbers, and while the El Cajon practice was definitely the bread and butter of Chris's income, the thing that I looked at and I listened to is I said, your dream is not to be going to El Cajon anymore. Your dream is to be practicing in Coronado 5 minutes from your home. You have a different demographic. It's a much better demographic than it is out in El Cajon. And you've got enough income that if you do it right, you can make this work and drop the El Cajon practice and drop 2 days a week. He was going out there, what, 2 days a week, Chris?
Yes, until I fired the associate.
2 days a week, and then...
It was 3 days there and 2 days in Coronado for 2006 until August.
Yeah, and what we did is I said, you need to close the El Cajon office. Now, Chris is very, what do we call it, penny-wise, dollar-wise. Chris is very careful with the money, and he was quite concerned when I said he wanted to sell the practice in El Cajon. And my advice was not to sell the practice, but simply close the practice, because if he sold it, he's only going to get a little bit for it, because...
Well, the tax gains would just eat you up.
The taxes were going to eat him up on it, on the capital gains on the practice. Plus, a practice is only worth about 18 months if it's net income. And I thought it'd be better to gamble, and I've done this several times, so I knew it was a pretty safe bet, to simply close that office, give yourself 6 months, start telling the patients in advance, face-to-face, not a letter, but face-to-face, that we're going to be, and they can come see us in Coronado. Chris was very skeptical of that would work. How'd that work, Chris?
Worked very well. We've been over in Coronado full-time for 6 months, and I've had probably 700 of the patients, which is about half of the previous practice, come over and follow me over here.
and they're probably the half that were probably doing the most dentistry.
Yes, they
are. Tell us a little bit. Let's talk numbers for a bit.
Gladly.
Your production when you had two offices was how much?
I think 05, we were just under 900,000, about 875.
And what'd you do in 06?
We did 1.1 million.
1.1.
With a 50% net.
And your net was between 550 and $600,000.
Yeah, it doubled from the previous year.
You doubled the net, and so we were conservative saying it went up by 100 this time.
Yes, it was a nice. It was worth all the work.
Now tell us some of the harder things that you had to do and how the coaching helped you a little bit with that. I mean,
I'm a very relationship-driven person, and the hardest thing was to really look at the people that were surrounding me. Although, you know, they're nice, good people, but they weren't ready to follow me where I was going to go. And so when I made the declaration, like I said, I had to let four people go, and then the other three, well, the other four that were with me gradually said, well, I'm just not going to come with you. And so that really kind of put a real evaluation on what they felt, you know, my mission was. So I have a whole new team, and took a young man who was working with me as a part-time assistant who was applying to dental school, put him up in the front office. He's done great. He's going to go to dental school in the fall. And first quarter this year, we've collected $250,000, so in 3 months. So we're still rolling.
Tell us about your trepidations and about team members, because you had some team members been with you for a long time.
Yet
they were pretty much doing their own. I guess one of the things that I did on that day that Chris and his wife came here is I asked some questions, and what we determined was about half of that team that he had, they were just picking up a check. I mean, they were working hard enough not to get fired. They were nice people.
Right.
And they were certainly not very interested in Chris's success or Chris's well-being. I mean, they were more interested in their paycheck and their own time off.
You're paying a hygienist $50 an hour to just kind of fiddle around and gab all day long. And, you know, you try and talk about selling more root planting and getting the numbers up, and they give it lip service, but you really don't see the numbers go up. You kind of go, okay, mm-hmm. Here's where we are.
And we had also worked, and by the way, the same hygienist was with him when he did the program originally, and we spent a lot of time then on how to sell dentistry, and she was one of the ones that actually
and
never
still
did.
Still a good friend.
She became a good friend, but she never did change the way that she presented treatment.
Yeah.
It was still, how can I educate people into submission? And when Chris decided to go to Coronado, he knew that he was going to have to really change that, because these people are a much higher income level. They're more highly educated, a little more sophisticated market that he's working in today, and yet he's been able to step up considerably the level of dentistry that he was doing, types of treatment.
Yeah. Until I made the transition, I had this other practice here in Coronado for 11 years, 2 days a week, and the first 7 years it was like, okay, I'm just going to come over here and kind of do what I do and relax after going, you know, gangbusters at the other office. But you can put a lot of swirling activity around and look busy but not put money in your pocket, and that's what the bottom line is.
Mm-hmm.
And pay your taxes. You got to pay Uncle Sam.
And what was the leadership that you put in place? I mean, how did you formulate and how did you get real clear on what it was you really wanted? I mean, you don't become a samurai. We laugh about that, and he had to do some pruning, of course. But how did you get so clear on what you wanted?
Well, it helps when you've been through this kind of thing before. When I was a sophomore in college looking to go on to dental school, I made the decision to drop a full-ride Navy scholarship and really focus on getting into dental school, because I knew the Navy probably wouldn't let me go to dental school. And so when you have to make the grade, you shut out everything else and give yourself a time frame where you totally focus on your goal, and that becomes your driving force. You can't run on afterburners a long time, but it certainly does help you to get very clear on what you want to do.
And we ask a lot of questions that day here in December to to help clarify that.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I thought was interesting about Chris is he loves dentistry. He actually loves going to work today, whereas a year and a half ago he was, like we said, his wife was afraid he wasn't going to hang in there till that magic 59 and a half, and now I think Chris will probably continue a long time after that, although he won't.
I'm trying to see if I can get it down to one day a week, Bill.
But financially, won't have to, but he will probably continue to practice for quite a while. Chris, tell us, describe the practice you have today. I mean, what's it made of? It's a small office, small staff.
1,200 square feet, four operatories. I have one operatory subleased to an oral surgeon. I have one assistant, one hygienist, and one front desk person. I work three full days and a half a day, and closed on Fridays.
Mm-hmm. How do you spread your 7 weeks vacation out? How does that work?
You did a study, Bill, where you look at your diagnosis rate relative to the time working. And I can the same formula has followed. A week mid-February, a week around after tax season when my wife gets off, usually the week after April 16th, the Memorial Day week, the 4th of July week, probably the third week in August. My birthday is the beginning of October, so sometimes it's the first week in October or after the October 15th tax deadline. 5 days at Thanksgiving, and then a week off between Christmas and New Year's.
Mm-hmm. The study that Chris is referring to is a study I did a number of years ago. I took 62 clients I was working with, and I kept track for 2 years. I tracked their diagnosis per day, and we measured that. It was counted as a diagnosis per day if money was discussed. If money was not discussed, it didn't count. So if the doctor or the hygienist said, hey, Bill, it would be a good idea to put a cap on that tooth, or have you thought about doing an implant or a bridge where that missing tooth is, that didn't count. Unless you actually discussed the money, it didn't count. So if you discuss money, we count it. We kept track of that. Diagnosis per day in the office, as that included hygiene and the doctor. And we graphed that. We did two things. We graphed diagnosis per day on the vertical, and on the horizontal, I did days of the week. And what I found was in these 62 doctors, and it was just universal, is after about 3 days, their diagnosis really started to fall off. Monday and Tuesday were their best days. Wednesday was a little bit less. And then by Thursday afternoon, they might as well get out of there because they're not doing anything anyway. And this is a problem because if you diagnose something one time, the patient comes back again 6 months later and you don't mention it, they assume that wasn't important and end up not doing it. The other thing that we discovered, so we had everybody then go from 5 days down to 4 days or 3.5 days a week, and we saw production actually go up. We then graphed the same thing, diagnosis per day on the vertical, and on the horizontal I did weeks spent on vacation because dentistry is hard work. And it's not just hard mentally, it's hard physically. And as Vince Lombardi said, the fatigue makes cowards out of us all. And when we're tired, it's also been standing with Walter Haley, called it confrontational tolerance. Your confrontational tolerance goes down. And so that's what happens on later in the week or when it's been a long time since the vacation is you're tired. Maybe the hygienist is talking to a patient about something. You walk into hygiene, you're tired, you're worn out, you can't wait to get out of there. And you don't want the patient to say yes because you're going to have to do it, and you're tired. And so you don't want them to say no because then you're going to feel like, well, now I've got to try and convince them to do this, and I don't want to do that either. So it's easier to simply say, let's put a watch on it. And, of course, I've always suggested to the assistants when we do our seminars that they ask you, and I always joke about it. I tell them this, I say, don't do this in front of the patient. But I said, doctors, be aware, they might. And, of course, the question is, doctor, just exactly what are we going to watch this one do? It's amazing what answers you may come up with. But Chris certainly was in that situation. It was fun working with Chris in the first few months right after he'd been here in Sun River, because I sent him home with a homework assignment. I says, look, you've got to duplicate the production that you're doing in El Cajon out in the desert out in the valley, out to the east of San Diego, if you're going to work just in one office, you still have to produce the same amount of dentistry, so you better kick it into gear. And so it was fun. I talked to him once a month and sometimes more than that, but he would keep telling me what he was producing and what people were accepting for treatment that he had been looking at for a long time and just didn't present it. Of course, he was worn out. You know, he was suffering from what I call
nerve impingement in the shoulders and everything. I mean, it's very real.
Yeah, he's physical symptoms. And I find so many dentists in the same situation. And I label that, I call it diagnosis fatigue syndrome. And it sets in. And you watch, if you were to graph, any of you on the call, graph your diagnosis per day and graph the amount of time since a vacation. I mean, I see this diagnosis fatigue syndrome and burnout so frequently among dentists. And so often, they don't even realize they have it.
Yep.
They don't realize they have it. We have a young couple right now. Chris has met them. They were actually in Portland, Chris. They will have an article in Dental Economics this month.
Good.
Jason and Colleen Uletsky. And you talk about what enthusiasm will do in a dental practice. They started a practice a year ago in April.
They're both dentists, Bill.
They're both dentists, husband and wife team. They have one employee between them. And I haven't talked to her now for 2 weeks to see, but they were just bumping $1 million this first 12 months. They just did not buy a practice. They started from scratch and did some very good marketing. But the main thing was enthusiasm. And I find doctors in Chris's situation very often in this burnout situation. Now, Chris, I don't know if Chris realized it. His wife realized it. His wife realized it.
I was at the bottom of the rut, still digging dirt.
Yeah, you find yourself in a hole, and very often you don't realize it. And there's an old axiom that says when you're in a hole, stop digging. But the problem is most of us, when we're in that situation, don't even realize it. We just get into it, and all of a sudden we're working harder and harder, and it doesn't seem as much fun. And one of the things that I work with clients is everybody says they want to reduce their stress. And I usually, when I'm doing a seminar, I have them draw a horizontal line on a page, and I put fun over on the right-hand side, and I put stress on the left-hand side of that line. Now, in the middle, I draw a hash mark, and I put neutral. Now, a lot of people, what I find and is what they talk about, is they talk about reducing the stress. Now, the best we can do in reducing the stress is we can get to neutral. And that's the problem, is life is too short to go through life in neutral. We need to move over onto the right-hand part of this equation and develop what's fun. And when I asked Chris a year and a half, year ago in December, what would be fun, what would be, describe for me what you would really like to be doing. And immediately, he said, I'd like to be practicing strictly in Coronado. Of course, I said, why not? And you had a few reasons at that time, Chris. Why not, remember?
Sure, I didn't think I could do it.
there were a lot of reasons. And one is financial. Just sending your son off to college, large commitment there. They've got a pension plan they're contributing to very heavily, and they're absolutely committed to that. They didn't want their net to drop, and that was the big fear. And that's the thing that so many people, we live out of fear, and we're afraid to move forward on something because we don't know what's going to happen. And the truth is, nobody knows what's going to happen. But I have seen several people in Chris's situation, not so much with two offices. I've seen that a few times. But more often, I see people with this burnout. They're just not having fun anymore. Oh, they're getting good results. I mean, he was making, almost $300,000.
Right.
So, I mean, it was, by most financial standards, he was doing very well. I mean, if you put yourself out there in the workforce and compare yourself to the rest of the workforce and put yourself at $300,000, you're certainly very high on the curve, except that it was just not fun. And
labored.
Yeah, it was labored. So tell us some of the things that you've done since you moved from El Cajon to Coronado. what are some of the things that you've done to restructure? You simply closed the practice in El Cajon.
Correct. The overhead with, before I closed it, the team with the associate had risen up to 36% for the salaries and all like that. The first time I worked with you, we had them at 19%. I said, you know, we're going back to make sure that we follow that 20% of the receipts go to teams. So I absolutely committed to have a 50% overhead. And I look at those numbers regularly. And
let's talk about team for a moment. A lot of doctors will do this. They'll bring in an associate because they're tired and worn out, not because they're producing so much dentistry, and that's kind of where Chris was.
Yep. And I had some hygiene issues. I had a hygienist that was just kind of sitting there la-la-laing and was not actually cleaning teeth. So we had to get rid of her, and I was in a bind, and the first associate had a hygiene degree, and she came in and really kind of took that perio load off of me until I could get my feet back under me. And she was wonderful. Then she had a baby. And the second associate was there trying to look for a practice to buy, and I almost felt like he was maybe circling his own wagons to get in the back door or take people and go down the street. And that just didn't feel...
And that was the El Cajon practice.
Yes, it was.
And see, this is the danger of having an associate in a satellite practice, is that... especially if the associate lives in that satellite community.
Right. But it was just sometimes when you look at change and you have to move the pendulum from one side all the way to the other, the effort it takes, just like you say, Bill, just to get back to neutral before you can start to rebuilding, there's so much to tear down, you kind of go, you know what, let's just level the playing field, start from neutral and build there.
Yeah. So now, in Coronado, what did you do? I mean, you've dramatically raised your production there in the last year. How'd you do that?
Ask people what they wanted. Mm-hmm. And it really is nice to have a very good working relationship with an excellent oral surgeon for putting implants in the office under sedation. I know you can go out and get a lot of training, and I've contemplated doing that. I put some simple implants in, and I still do some. But, a lot of people like to be asleep, and... So certainly the implants did more. I went up and took an updated anterior restorative course from a guy named Rye Spore in Seattle, which was an excellent course. And just kind of re-dove back into continuing education as a way of firing myself up. I've got my mastership in the Academy of General Dentistry and always enjoyed that. So a few good courses at the right time helped to kind of pump me back up as far as the dentistry goes.
Something interesting about Chris and his burnout, while he has his master's in AGD, he had kind of gotten out of the habit of taking CE courses because he wasn't enjoying dentistry that much the last few years. And when he had time off, he wanted to get as far away from it as he could. What's been fun is to watch Chris all of a sudden. He really did a lot of CE years ago.
Yeah.
And then he kind of slowed down. Not kind of, he really slowed down. And then to watch him in the last year get back in the game.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of fun. I mean, I see the enthusiasm there. Okay, now tell me about the training of your team. And you only have three people there, and you're doing a million plus.
My dental assistant, they're all college grads. The dental assistant had graduated from college, decided she wanted to go into hygiene, but she went to dental assisting school first. This is her first job at a dental assisting school. She has been accepted into the hygiene training program here in San Diego in 2010. So she's figuring a year or two she'll work for me and then go on to hygiene school. But they'll probably call her a little sooner, which is great. You know, I certainly support her stepping up. But,
and then Scott got into Tufts.
Heading
for dental school.
He came in, started working part-time as an assistant, doing some lab work. And when this change came about, I said, Scott, you want to do the front desk? And he said, absolutely. I said, you're sure going to learn a lot. So over this course, he's been up at the front desk since we made the shift in August, and our accounts receivable has dropped from about $90,000 when we made the transition down to about 45 now.
Mm-hmm.
We just got very clear in our communications about money. And as long as we're not adding more accounts to the hopper, geez, it starts to go down as you do resolve some of these accounts.
So that left your hygienist. Now, you'd let your hygienist go. You decided that the hygienist didn't see the vision at all, and you had a new hygienist come out from Chicago.
A new hygienist came out here. She was moving out from Chicago. When I called her previous boss, he had 10 hygienists working in his practice with he and his associates, and he said she was always my number one or number two producer.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, that's good enough for me, and she's very cute. But she gets very good compliance and good perio skills. So,
Chris, what would you say to a doctor? I mean, this is something I hear from doctors from time to time.
Okay.
You know, I'd really love to do something like this. I'd love to follow my dream and my vision, but I'm afraid my staff won't come along. I wanted you to talk about your staff training. What would you say? Because it shows that you can train and you can get a new staff. Wasn't that difficult? As a matter of fact, what would you say to people who are concerned about making changes in their practice to better the practice, to make it more fun and more productive, but they're afraid their staff won't go along?
Don't be afraid, because a lot sometimes, you know, if they're not aligned with where you want to go and just you know, one of your biggest supporters, then don't be afraid to give them the opportunity to go someplace else. And it's tough sometimes. I mean, of all the angst that has ever come through my life in dentistry, it is predominantly centered around my relationships with my team.
Mm-hmm.
Because they, for some reason, you know, they're just not showing up. It's not their agenda. And, you know, it's tough to find good help. And so you do...
Tough to find good help. However, you said something earlier that I think is interesting. All of your team's members are college graduates.
Yes.
One of the things, Carolyn is writing an article for Dental Economics this week, and it's on team selection. It'll be about 3 months out. But one of the things that we were discussing today was hiring people attitude, number one. Number two is curiosity. And the fact that they've gone through college means... to me, they're curious, they're interested in learning, and they are willing to stick with something to completion. Scott was part-time,
yes,
out of college, thinking about going to dental school. You put him to work as an assistant, moved him to the front office, a very key position. And yet during that very key, having Scott there in that key position, your production almost doubled, your net went up dramatically, your receivables went down. What does that say for the ability to train someone from scratch and put them in a key position like that?
Somebody who wants to learn. I mean, the nothing against the people that were there before, but they got very, very comfortable with the routine. And they would not stretch.
I mean, I see very often, Chris, I see offices that are doing a million one, million two, and they'll have more than one person in the front office. And
three of them.
And they claim they're extremely busy, and yet here you've got Scott, who took that job on less than a year ago with no background whatsoever, and you've done extremely well.
That did help, Bill, as I think about it, we were starting to get, you know, with a number of people, we were moving 45 to 50 people a day through the office with two hygienists and my busy schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And we were getting bunched up at the front office.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at going with a more sophisticated dental software program. Until I really looked at the little system that I have now, I said, all I need to do is just decentralize this. So we put a wireless router in and laptops in the operatory so that we can do our posting and processing and next appointment scheduling from the operatory. So the hygienist, when she's checking out the person, will set up the next appointment, post the charges for the day. That automatically can be enter into the electronic billing that goes off electronically every day to the WebMD or whatever, MDON, I think that's what they're called now. And so by the time that the patient is ready to go out, we don't have this big bottleneck up at the front office, and it allows somebody at the front desk to really be not trying to juggle 15 balls at one time and put across a disjointed picture.
Yes.
Because that's the person that is going to be setting the tone for any new patient, you know, coming in. Hi, Dr. Weber. Okay, can you hold just a second, please? Bye. And off they go. So
this is something that we've been teaching for several years now, is to have as much done in the treatment room as possible. Now, a lot of consultants are saying this is silly, but what we found is we have a practice right now that is going to break $2 million this year with three people. Everyone in the office is fully cross-trained. That's what I was hinting at for Chris to say, that everyone is cross-trained. There is no job description. Everyone does everything. But we have found that by having the hygienist check her patient, make the next appointment right in the treatment room, go ahead, produce an insurance form if it's insurance, electronically bill, however you do it, and collect the patient's portion right then, and by simply saying, I'd be happy to take your credit card, I'll be your cashier. Swiping the card, and many of our practices actually have the point of sale machine right in the treatment room in hygiene and the dental operatives. Swipe the card, get the copy, ask the patient their autograph, and the yellow copy is yours. And we eliminate a whole bunch of work that way. And it also is, the patients love it. And it's real interesting to see the resistance of people in offices to do that. But the ones who are doing it just think it's absolutely wonderful. But better than that, the patients love it. And the analogy I use in a seminar is, if you go to a really nice restaurant, you finish your meal, they bring the check to the table, you hand them your credit card, they very discreetly leave, they come back, they ask for your autograph, and you sign it, and you're on your way. You go to Joe's Diner, finish your meal, they still bring the check to the table, and you go stand in line at the cash register and pay your bill. And that's what we find in most dental offices, is people standing out there, sometimes standing in line, especially if you have multiple hygienists. They're literally standing in line waiting their turn to pay, but it's in a very public area, and it's just not as nice. So they're cross-trained in that way. Now, how did Scott pick all this up so fast? I know he's bright, and he was eager to learn.
Because you say, this is the way we're going to do it, and he goes, okay. And there's no lip, and there's no back talk, well, we haven't done it that way. This is the way you want it done? Fine. And you stumbled maybe a time or two, but then you say, okay, let's do it. Plus, it also helps, Bill, that the team members start to see a little reward for their effort. And you do have a sharing plan that, in fact, I was just pulling up the numbers today. Each of the team members during this first quarter has received $1,500 above and beyond their wages.
On the bonus plan.
In bonus money.
Yeah, our bonus plan is based on 20% for staff salaries. And so Chris is just fine. He doesn't care how much they make. I mean, you'd be happy to pay him $1,500 a month, and some of our offices do. We literally have some team members on some of our offices that are earning in excess of $100,000 a year. And,
well, the nice thing, Bill, is they're not always coming to you, I need a raise.
Yes.
I need a raise. You say, look, that's it. This is your variable part of your compensation, and you are as much responsible for the collection of this. This is a business. This is how it runs. You know, the numbers make the world go around.
So your team knows the numbers.
Yes.
They know all the numbers. They know what we're collecting, producing. They know what the overhead is. They know.
We could be better on that, but they know what it takes to get the numbers.
Yes.
And they know I'm watching.
Yes. Now tell me how Scott has reduced your receivables that much, because I mean, you've doubled your production while you cut your receivables in half. I mean, that's pretty phenomenal, given that Scott is brand new on the job.
Well, we've both been working together on that, looking, you know, drawing on my relationship with the patients and knowing there were some patients that had really been dragging along. You know, they pay $100 a month regularly, but they always seem to have about $1,000 out there. So I've done this a couple times before where you write them a letter. I say, you know, for this one instance, if you can take care of your bill within the next 30 days and get it down to zero, I'm going to give you a 30% off of that.
Okay.
And there was this last time I did it was probably a year and a half ago, and out of the 11 people that I sent out, 8 of them did. Makes it a win-win for them.
Mm-hmm.
I even offered to convert some of them over to the care credit. None of them really did that, but we sure talked about that as an option. And
obviously he's changed the financial arrangements going into treatment.
Right, and that's because you're not putting additional people into that you know, delayed payment hopper, or we just put off the treatment. I said, you know, you're not ready to do this. When you are, please let me know. You can either finance it, do your credit card, if you're ready to get going, but if you need some time to save up, don't send the money to me. I'll be glad to hold it for you if you want me, but set it in your own bank account and you do it that way. Whatever you want to, you know, however you want to pay for it, just realize that you will be paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to do the treatment and then be forced to give it away.
Right.
I go in on Friday mornings and do some of my pro bono work to the people that I feel like giving to them, rather than...
You choose them.
Yep.
You choose
rather
them.
Than having people...
Let me ask you this question, Chris.
Yep.
It's going to be about coaching.
Okay.
Did I ask you to do some uncomfortable things?
yeah.
Yep.
Yep. I have a picture of a guy sitting in a desk chair and there's a fire under his ass. And I remind myself that it, you know, nothing happens unless you get off the hot seat and get going.
You know, I believe Chris probably could have done this himself, but I would like to say I doubt if he would have. What would you say to that?
I think inherently we all cognitively know what to do, but we're all creatures of habit, and it's easy to just kind of say, oh, I'll do it later. When you have somebody that you're paying a lot of money to, which is a very good investment, and you're going to commit to getting it done, then by God, you get it done.
What is it? I mean, I don't think I told you anything that you didn't already know.
No, I already been through your program once.
That's right. There wasn't anything different. I think we've improved our case presentation technique quite a bit in the last 15 years.
Yes.
But it really wasn't dramatically different. It still revolves around asking the patients questions to find out what they want and quit trying to educate them into submission. But what was it that got you this time to actually do what you needed to do to make this fun again?
Well, I was ready to do it.
Okay.
Okay. When the student is ready, the teacher is found. Well, I already knew who the teacher was because we've been through this before, and I've worked with others, some other very good consultants, doing some different things, but I didn't quite have the results that you and I have had together.
Mm-hmm.
Even Olympic swimmers, when they're in the pool swimming, have a coach on the deck that says, no, I can see your feet aren't kicking properly.
Mm-hmm.
Try this.
Yeah.
I think you told me once also, Bill, the consultant is one that looks at your watch and tells you what time it is. So I knew what time it was. I just wasn't able to, because you're so mired in the day-to-day stuff that you really can't get a bigger picture and an objective assessment without the emotion clouding your view of things.
Yeah. See, what I would like to think is that, yes, I'm a consultant, but mainly a coach. A consultant generally comes in and fixes a problem. What I like to do and what I believe I helped Chris and Joy do the day in Sun River was I've been a pilot for 35 years, and I like to back up and take a look from 40,000 feet and see where this thing is going before I go in and start fixing problems. Because one of the things I've learned about dental practices, you can fix problems, but the dentist and the team can come up with problems faster than consultants can fix them. As long as we fix them ourselves. And what I like to believe that I do is by looking from 40,000 feet, and then when I get up to 40,000 feet and I start to see what's happening and the direction the practice is going, I like to get the doctor and their spouse up to 40,000 feet as well and say, hey, come up here with me and take a look what I see.
Well, and you've also had a chance, Bill, to see a number of different things over your years that, you know, everybody has their own different little process they have to go through. But you can say, you know what, there's a resource over here you might want to look at, or you might consider this. You know, try it. This person worked very well. You have to decide if it works for you.
Well, the interesting thing is I was speaking to a group of doctors in Vancouver, British Columbia, on Saturday and Sunday this weekend, and one of the things I said to them was I said that I really don't have the answers. I have lots of questions, but over the last 20 years, I've worked somewhere in around 2,000 offices. And a majority of what I teach today is what I've learned from those 2,000 offices. And you do see a lot of combinations that I didn't even know existed when I first went into this business. When I first went into this, I was teaching people more how to practice like I practice. And, of course, I practiced aerobic dentistry. At one time, I had 16 employees, 10 operatories, and, you know, I hit $1 million back in the mid-'80s, but I had a good friend who his net was just as high as mine, and he did 600. And the next year, I decided I'm going to solve that, and I did. But I taught more a model that I knew. But over the 20 years, I've discovered that there are lots of models, lots of ways to practice dentistry, and a lot of them work extremely well. And you can, by taking that base and going to 40,000 feet, you can get some ideas. And I was very confident that Chris could do this. And I was also very confident, because of his relationship-based practice, that a good number of those patients in El Cajon would drive the hour or 45 minutes over to Coronado. And one of the things that we had Chris do is we had him study where all the patients come from. Well, some of them did come from the east side of El Cajon, so they had quite a long drive, but a lot of them came.
They still do.
And some of those still come all the way to you.
I had one came from Escondido today, which is almost an hour and a half away.
Yeah.
That are coming over from Arizona.
But they have been doing that for a long time, and that drive didn't make any difference. And I was very confident that would occur, because I've seen that. I also knew that if he sold that practice, he would have gotten a little bit out of it. But 18 months later, he will produce the same on that practice. And my suspicion is that... And my observation in helping other doctors do the same thing is the 700 that came, and I don't know if you've done this, Chris, at the 80-20 spreadsheet on who's actually shown up in your practice. My guess is they were generally the ones that were spending money anyway.
Mm-hmm.
They probably weren't the ones. Tell us a little about your community involvement. I mean, you have not really started a branding project as such yet. You're just barely getting started on that.
I got my website up this weekend.
Very good. Okay. And what else are you doing in the community involvement?
I'm involved with the Rotary Club.
You transferred your Rotary membership.
I transferred the Rotary membership.
And you're also active in that.
Yes.
Yes.
It's fun.
What else are you doing in the community?
Well, we just redid our front garden, and the local garden club came around and gave it a beauty spot award and get the picture in the paper.
Excellent.
When the had the Relay for Life, for the American Cancer Society, I went down over five different years, and I would do bleaching for anybody who showed up at half price.
Good for you.
$75 an arch, and you write the check to the American Cancer Society. The materials were donated by the bleaching company and Patterson Dental, and it was a long day. I mean, but we raised $7,000 the last time we did that in one day.
Excellent.
So, you know, people, you just go out and...
So you're visible in that community.
It's not a big community. We have 17,000 people here.
Mm-hmm. Very nice community, however.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop asking questions for Chris. I've got a little wrap-up I'd like to do, but I'd like to know if any of the doctors on the call or any of my people have any questions for Chris at this time. Now, to ask a question, you have to hit the 6 button on your phone, which unmutes your phone. It takes a couple seconds before we can hear you. How Chris did this and how he made such dramatic changes in his practice in a year's time, including quite a change of team members.
Yeah.
Dr. Chris, this is David Curry in Fort Lauderdale.
Hi, David.
Good evening to you, sir. In reference to changing your staff, what training did you find available through the Blatchford Custom Coaching Program to really help you transition your new members into a fully productive team?
Well, we started everybody out new, and I said, you know, there are some initial team building seminars. We went to Portland, and then we went to Orlando, and in which Bill is presenting a lot of the basics of his program, and that's included with the coaching. Again, I was taken off with a brand new team. They're a lot younger than I am. He's 20 years older than all of them, and it was fun. They came together, we had a worked hard, and then we went out and played a little bit afterwards. So certainly hand holding and just reassuring them that I know you're going to be uncomfortable in some situations. If you have some questions, I'd be glad to be your resource. Let's role play some of these situations that may seem a little bit uncomfortable now, but the more you tend to look at them and think about them, the easier they become.
And how much do you role play on what basis? I mean, how often do you role play?
Not as much as we should.
That's okay. Well, this isn't a coaching call, Chris. This is.
Oh, I mean, but what we usually do is if there's a situation that comes up where somebody has some questions about how it was handled, or you know, just wants to run it by. I mean, we just do that on a continuing basis. It's not like, okay, now we're going to sit down and role play, where, you know, if there's a question that comes up, we'll say, okay, let's see how we would have handled that.
Excellent.
Once we step back and all look at it as a group instead of, or if there is a situation that comes up, I try and catch him doing something right and say, you know, that's really great the way you handled that. Thank you.
So it's become a regular part of your team meeting.
It's an intercourse, it happens.
Great. Other questions for Chris? If any of the doctors have any questions, just hit your six button. And
Chris, this is Hello. Peter Mumpton in San Diego.
Hello, Peter.
Hi. Can you tell us a bit about, what ongoing training do you provide or do you encourage your team to do in the way of, do you have any books that you encourage them to read, or do you have a specific book a month or something like that?
We've gone over the Integrity Selling book with Ron Willingham. Certainly these are young people just coming out of school. I have books available. Sometimes they'll take them. We haven't been formal in going through individual books, but, you know, I try and make resources available for sales. I like to say that they've been on every group call that Bill's organization's put out there, but they haven't. They go home and they want to not think about dentistry sometimes, but when they're at the office, they are thinking about that. They're not trying to call the next person and set up a date for Saturday night.
We also record all of those group calls so team members can listen to them at their leisure. We send them to the doctors on a regular basis, and we have once a month we have a call for staff members, we have a call for doctors, and I have individual calls with doctors. We record this team call. That's handled by my two consultants. Most of the time I'm on them, some of the times we record those and they get a CD and they can duplicate that and everybody can listen to it on their way to work. So that's one way we can handle that ongoing training. Plus
Peter,
our consultant does come to your office for a couple of days.
Yeah, I would also say there was a huge difference in the consultant's experience. That we used a lady named Kay that came into the office when she first came into the old team that was in the El Cajon office. You know, she tried to do a little rah-rah and get them pumped up, and they just kind of sat there like, duh. You know, why, what, this again? Okay, well, we'll go along with it for the first week, and then we can go back to our old ways.
So that's where leadership comes in.
Yeah.
You see, Chris had spent the money to have our consultant fly down to San Diego, and the staff sat there and said, yeah, right. And
I
that
said,
right
oh,
there,
okay.
that's your attitude we're talking about.
Guess what? I still sign the paychecks on the front.
Yeah.
You sign them on the back. So.
And the staff just wasn't responding. And so and that's the thing, that this is so hard for so many doctors, Chris, is that, and this is the hardest thing that anybody has to do, I believe, as an employer, is you have your dream. And so often the dream gets sidetracked by people who work with you that don't share that dream. And so many doctors are willing to sell out of the dream because of that. And I think your case, and you were a samurai, and you gave them every opportunity. I mean, he described the dream. He described what he wanted to do. Now, he knew he was going to reduce staff some, because you only have one office instead of two, you don't need that many people. But he could have used about three of them, maybe even four. And by the way, they had every opportunity to self-select, and they didn't all live out in El Cajon either. So they could have been the three or four, but
I think they felt they were trying to protect me for a while, and you know, carry me along. But it really has to come from the leader.
Yeah.
You can't push a ship.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have wind blowing in the sails to get it going forward.
Any other questions for Chris? Would you do it again?
In a heartbeat.
Okay. Well, what I'd like to do is thank everybody on this call tonight. I invite you to visit our website. We have several products. We have a book, Playing Your A Game, that interviews 23 offices. All the proceeds of that book go to the Juvenile Diabetic Research Foundation and the University of Oregon Dental School, who is getting ready to build a new dental school. And I've been writing checks to the dean of the dental school. He's not my new best friend. And we also have the Blatchford Files, which is a monthly audio CD that I prepare on various topics. You get one a month. We have that available. And, of course, we have our coaching program. Someone from our organization will contact you after signing up for this call. I have a request. Have the courtesy to at least return the call. If you're not interested in what we do at this time, that's fine. We do not bother you. We do not chase people. I only take 50 clients a year. And we select people, and the enrollment people are constantly selecting people. That's about 4 a month. And we would welcome you to take a look at the program. If you're interested, they will work with you. I may have some calls with you, find out what your dreams and aspirations are, and see if we can help you get there. Sometimes we help expand the dreams as well. Again, I want to thank Rocket Dog. I want to thank Michael for putting this call together and all your help. Marketing's an excellent job of helping us. Their branding is helping a lot of other doctors. Michael, are you there?
I am here.
Very good.
My pleasure. Thank you
very much, Michael. And Care Credit again. And again, of course, I want to thank Chris Kleber for being willing to show everything, dirty laundry and everything, with what was going on in his practice back in late 05. So thank you very much, Chris.
You're very welcome, Bill.
Good night, everybody, and you can now go watch the basketball game.
Thanks, Bill.